We're on day three here at the MAS, and I am here with Will Fern. Hey, Will.
Hi, Scott.
And Will was actually a winner of the Strolling Olympics at the IBM convention this last year in Dallas. Was that something you'd actually planned for, or you just kind of showed up and they said, I think I'll do it?
Well, I actually went there to compete for the Carol Fox Award for Comedy Magic, and having not made the finals, a friend of mine said, John George from L.A., said, hey, listen, you're already a loser. Why don't you try for the Strolling Olympics? So I said, all right, whatever. I didn't really plan to perform and compete.
Yeah.
But I had a deck. I had my four favorite silver dollars, and I just figured, what the hell. So I ran around like a nut. And
made it to a lot of tables and everything. Yep, you got a fast moving style.
Yeah, so being from Jersey was my best. I'm a fast talking guy, and I got to more tables than anybody. That's why I think I won.
And then you were one of the featured performers then last evening on the evening show, along with several others. I thought you did an excellent job.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir.
And is that something that you do as part of your regular corporate type of events that you do?
Yes. Two of my favorite pieces to do for corporate crowds is what I chose to do last night.
Explain that a little bit, since obviously they didn't see it. And
sure. I have a really fun routine for Card in Orange, where two women volunteer to come up on stage, and each gets to wear a different hat. One's a genie, one's a bunny, and through the use of a laser pointer, I direct them through a Card in Orange sequence that John Calvert marketed years ago called the Boo Bobolick. So just a great audience participation number. And my second piece is my version of Add a Number, which is a
most off the wall kind of Add a Number.
Yeah, it's out there. It's a mind reading mermaid. Aloe Vera, the mind reading mermaid, is an Add a Number with a ping pong ball in her mouth and a blindfold, and somehow she gets the thought of the Add a Number sequence of numbers and also a word looked at in a book magically written on the ball.
In her mouth.
That was, the ping pong ball pops out of the mouth with Heimlich maneuvers, and somehow on the ball is the predictions, yeah.
And the mermaid herself is really a blow-up doll. My question is that as far as the mermaid or the bottom part of that, I mean, her...
Her tail fin.
Yeah. Was that actually part of what you bought?
I just bought a regular sex blow-up doll at a sex shop. But I had I lived a number of years in Barbados working down there, and I had a tailor down there make me a beautiful green sequined mermaid outfit with a big foam tail. It looks perfect.
That's why I wondered. It looked like it was custom. Well, it looked like it came with it. It was custom made.
Wow.
But there has never been a blow-up doll in the past that had custom clothing made for it. Usually they want the clothes off.
Yeah, size zero usually fits a blow-up doll. She used to be Latex Lucy, the sultry psychic, but she, in my Barbados days, morphed into Aloe Vera, the mind-reading mermaid.
Now, we haven't talked too much about a lot of the lectures. We've had, I think, some very interesting lectures. I don't know if you caught the first day. You know, we had Jania Taylor was talking about marketing, and it was just all different great ideas on how to market and the kinds of promotional materials that you need. David Corsaro was talking about his stuff then, too. Did you see any of the...
I've seen Dave lecture in the past. It always hits very strong because he's a real-world performer. He's one of my best friends in magic. Mm-hmm. The guy just does a ton of gigs. He's one of my go-to guys to give my extra gigs to because he's just excellent. Mm-hmm. People love him, and he knows his stuff. And he's a marketing expert. The guy's a marketing guru in the real world. And he knows the ins and outs, and he's taught me a lot. And he could teach anybody in magic a lot about how to market themselves better.
And he's got a website. Was it timetobeamazing.com?
Timetobeawesome.com.
Awesome.com.
He's got a great collection of interviews with top guys he's gotten over the years from conventions and Fectors, and he's just something great. It's a great resource.
It has been very good. Well, have you come to the MES? I guess since being from Jersey, you probably attend these frequently?
It was the first one I ever attended years ago. And funny, just the three guys around the bill have, through three separate ways, become three of my closest friends in magic. Was Kevin Dave. Bethay, Dean Dill, and Bob Sheets have all, in different ways over the years, become three of my best buddies. And I met them all at my first magic convention. I just looked up to these guys as huge stars, and they are, and they're just my three of my guiding lights, the strongest performers that I know. I love those guys.
Yeah, well, like, cool. Is this the first time that you actually worked at MAS? I'm assuming it's
I've never worked at a convention.
Really?
Yep. Mike Miller saw me doing some card tricks at Magic in the Rockies last year. He said, hey, why don't you do something? Well, how come I never saw you perform? I just didn't think you even performed. I said, yeah, I work. He said, okay, we'll do MAS next year. Sure. So, you know, I was flattered that Mike invited me down, and Mike's just one of the best guys around in magic. So you can't say no to Mike. So I was happy to come here and do some magic.
That was very, very great. Well, I know that you have to bug out of here, then also that being a working, busy professional magician, that you've got a show here this evening, you're not going to be able to stay for the evening show.
So. I wish I could, yeah.
Yeah. But thanks a lot for coming in. Thanks a lot for being part of the podcast. Also, one last question. This is called a magic word. So my question to you is, what is your magic word?
My magic word is, what's a good magic word?
Could be for your life. It could be for magic. I mean, your performance. Just what do you live by? What's a word?
Magic word is honesty. Just be honest. Be honest to everybody all the time, because liars need memories. I have no memories, so honesty pays off for me.
You don't have to remember the lie you told.
That's right, exactly.
It's easier to tell the truth.
Be honest. Even
thank you very much.
Thanks,
I appreciate it very much. That's for all for now. Scotty out. Well, I'm here with David Crucero, and that we chatted briefly at Fector's earlier this year then also. I think when I was working on a podcast there, but hello, David, again.
Hi, nice to see you again.
I just wanted to congratulate you also. I've been kind of doing everything here. You lectured, did close-up, and then tonight,
the
final gala stage kind of thing. And also, you've attended most of the things, so that's why I wanted to chat with you just a little bit over here on some of the lectures. I really haven't talked too much about the activities and things. I mean, I've seen the dealer's room and everything. Looks like it's been good. Tell me about your perspective on some of the lectures, things that have been outstanding or some ideas that are takeaway for you and some of the people.
The lectures, they really did a great job at the MAES this year of taking the lectures from a variety of different areas of magic. There's people who've been focusing on stage. There's people who focus on close-up. There's people who focus on creativity, people who focus on marketing. And I think that's really what you're ultimately looking to try to do when you put together a convention.
Good point.
Is make sure you have something that's going to touch on a variety of different areas so that all the registrants will get something out of the lecture lineup.
Right.
And, I mean, we just watched Arthur Trace do an absolutely killer lecture. I've never seen Arthur lecture before, so I was really excited about it. And his thoughts on creativity were absolutely brilliant. And I think that's the kind of stuff that can be applied, whether you're a hobbyist or you're a full-time pro. His stuff was the kind of stuff that anybody should be able to walk out and go, good, got something from there.
Right.
And we saw that across the board, both with Scott Wells, who did an incredible lecture a couple hours ago, to Lou Zander's lecture yesterday. They did a really nice job this year.
They did. You know, and talking about Arthur, that it wasn't just the trick so much. Man, I don't know that a lot of people are going to go walk away doing the tricks that he was teaching, but it wasn't so much that as it was the premise of the trick and saying that in order to make your magic stronger, it's to build in that premise so that people are thinking, you know, about the presentation and not necessarily the method. You obfuscate the method a little bit by using the premise.
I think some people do it a somewhat disservice to themselves by thinking, you know what, that's only for the stage guys, or that's only for the guys who perform at the castle. Mm-hmm. I just perform for friends or family, so I don't need to think too much about the premise, which is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not suggesting that every routine you do has to have some deep, meaningful story about your grandfather's aces or whatever. Right. That's not the case. But your magic can just benefit by stopping once in a while and thinking, how can I make this a little bit better? How can I just add a little bit of premise or other things to it that's going to take it one step further, whether it be for your kids, your grandkids, your friends, or your business partners?
Right.
It's going to make it stronger. And Arthur did a fantastic job of explaining that.
Yeah, yeah. And I thought also, let's go back then to the close-up show then yesterday. You were part of that, which I thought
was
awesome. And
thank
I think, talk about some of the other people. Did you get a chance to see the other performers then as well?
I did.
Ruben and everybody?
I did. Ruben Moreland did, I think, the act that he won a few contests with last year, which was great. Ruben's got a great personality. He comes out on the stage, you immediately bring a smile to your face, just the way he acts up on stage.
It's like a young redheaded Bill Malone, you know, to me.
Yeah, that's a really great way to put it. I didn't think of it like that, but yeah, you're right. And so he did a fantastic job. Will Fern, who I lovingly refer to as the magician I want to be. Will just knows how to own a room. He knows how to own an audience, and he brings humor. He brings incredible magic to his performance, and he did a great job yesterday. Arthur did a fantastic job, really bringing some unique magic to it. His bit with an apple, if you've never seen it, really caught a lot of magicians off guard and shocked the heck out of them. So, really nice lineup this year. Nice variety of magicians, some of whom are established performers that you've seen before, and some of them are brand new guys that really, you know, kind of excite people that there are some newcomers in magic to look forward to.
Exactly, and along that line, I just talked to Will, and he said this was the first time, although he's been coming to MAS for years, this is the first time they've asked him to actually perform, and he did his show than last evening, and I think he just killed
it. Oh, well, his show last night, if you've never had a chance to see Will Farm perform, he's done some stuff at the Dickens Theater. He's also done some, he does some restaurant work in Scotch Plains, New Jersey, and when Will gets on stage, you got to buckle yourself in, because he's on a level of caffeinated coffee that I can't even imagine. And
there is no fourth wall there.
No,
everybody.
It's Robin Williams on drugs is
right,
when you get Will Farm. So that was that, and I'm looking forward to performing on tonight's show.
Yep, that should be a very good show. I think this evening we're going to have a good lineup with yourself, and with Arthur Dreis is going to be on, some other people too. I think it's going to
Francis Minotti, I think, is closing tonight, and Francis, much like Arthur, and I mean they're friends, but Francis, much like Arthur, is an incredibly creative magician who, if you've never seen his new razor swallowing routine, have you seen it?
I've not seen that. No,
wait till you see it tonight.
Okay.
I watched him rehearse it. He was doing Monday Night Magic a few months ago. I was hosting. Francis was headlining. And I sat there and I watched him rehearse this razor swallowing routine. And I stood up and I was like, all right, we're done. I can't. Nobody's going to follow you. Nobody's going to be able to touch. I felt like such a hack, because what he did was so creative and it was so brilliant. And it justified everything about a routine that for previous was just, watch, I'm going to swallow a razor.
Yeah.
I'm going to swallow a thread. Now it's together. He justifies it in such a beautiful way. It makes me so jealous.
Wow. Well, I kind of like that. Talk about justifying, you know, what Arthur Dreis had done with the bee, the invisible bees. Yes. I thought was kind of neat.
And what killed me was that I felt like that was an idea that was just sitting there.
Yes.
Waiting to be discovered.
Somebody plucked it.
And he's the one who pulled it out. And it's because he's good. It's because he knows how to be creative.
The idea quickly, so that way you know what we're talking about, where he had a canister of invisible bees, basically, got out, and then he put it in a piece of tissue paper, which then came to life, and you can hear buzzing inside of there, which made sense, you know, for this thing.
Justifies.
Beautiful.
Very
good. So you've been coming to the convention then for a number of years, being a local Jersey boy. That, but is this the first time you've actually performed and lectured and everything?
Yes. So the first time I performed, lectured here. I've done a few other conventions before.
Yeah,
I'm going to be lecturing, doing close up and stage at the Motor City Convention in November, and then at the Carolina Close Up Convention next year. This is the first time that Mike Miller has hooked me up with a few lectures in the past. Mark D'Souza had me lecture at his house. So both guys, I've seen me do my stuff before, and this was the first time they asked me to come here. It's been a real honor, and it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, it has been for me, too. I've really enjoyed it. And I've enjoyed talking with you. Thank you very much. Appreciate your time, and Dave, looking forward then to seeing you perform then tonight. Then, too, a quick question that my podcast is called The Magic Word. What is your word? What word do you use, let's say, in life and magic and, you know, in general? What would be a word that you would live by? What's your magic word?
What's my magic word?
Yeah.
Wow, that is such a deep question. I didn't think I was gonna get something like that. I mean, listen, I don't want to steal a reference to a Chris Angel show in Las Vegas, but I love the word believe. I really do. I think it's a very powerful word. I don't think people... If you can get somebody to believe, and really think about that for a minute, really believe something.
Mm-hmm. Conviction.
That's deep. You've hit them on an emotional and intellectual level like not many people do. It's not that often that every day you have a belief in something. So if you can get your audience to believe... I think you've just been you've ingrained yourself in their memory the rest of their life.
Right.
And if that's something we should all be shooting for, I think it makes us all better magicians.
That's an excellent word. I appreciate it very much. Thank you for your time.
Thanks a lot, Scott. I really appreciate it. I love your podcast. It's a great thing.
Thank you very much. And yours also, Time to Be Awesome.
Mine's a video cast called TimeToBeAwesome.com. You can go check it out. I've interviewed a lot of really great magicians talking about creativity and magic, and check it out.
It's all
free.
Archive.
Enjoy.
Yeah. Go take it a look.
Thanks a lot.
All right. This is Scotty out. All right, I am at a location which is right next door to the hotel, Crown Plaza, where the MAS convention is going on, and I'm over here because, well, it's a chocolate factory. So I'm here with Eleanor, who's one of the proprietors who's working. Hello, Eleanor.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing great, thank you, and thanks for showing me around. But as I just came in the front door, tell me a little bit about the building. This doesn't look like a typical chocolate factory. I don't envision Willy Wonka having, you know.
Right. Well, this isn't our factory. This is more or less what our chocolate house. The factory we moved from Pennsauken to Atlantic City because James, a co-brother of Frelinger's Saltwater Taffy Company, bought our company. So this looks more like a dwelling for somebody to live. It's an exuberantly large house.
Yes.
And we
two stories, three stories?
Two stories, yeah. Plus the, no, well, I'll say three, but the third is really the attic.
Kind of a colonial style.
Right, and a full basement,
oh,
I
wow.
mean, which is
full
our
chocolates
basket.
Too?
No, that's our basket department. That's where we do our creativity of the baskets.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
And the two tiers and stuff. And our chocolate's made in Atlantic City, mm-hmm. and it's brought to us. We pack it daily, and we have it open on display. So
it's really fresh chocolates?
All our chocolate has a six-month shelf life.
Okay.
And it's 60% cocoa.
Yeah.
So it's got the highest qualities we can put into it, come be with the economy.
Right.
And this is basically made in, this is here for over, I don't know how long in business, but I know it's a good 40 or more years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was thinking about the one out in Las Vegas, and they have, that's a chocolate factory too. Gosh, I've been to that several times. And theirs doesn't last more than like a week. It has no preservatives whatsoever in it. I'm not sure how much cocoa.
Well, we have emulsifiers and stuff like that in mm-hmm. our chocolate, which is more or less like a preservative.
Yes.
There's a lot of things, and we do, now we're doing kosher.
Kosher chocolate?
We're doing the,
what,
like, marshmallows have to be kosher. Yes, we had to have
okay.
everything at our factory done specifically because we have a lot of kosher clientele around.
Oh, okay.
And we also, we have a lot of people who have gluten problems. So they're trying to incorporate the gluten-free
okay.
at the same time. And I'll say a lot of our chocolates and stuff are handmade, hand-dipped.
Right.
Certain stuff are hand-dipped.
You know, I visualize Lucille Ball, you know, and doing that kind of thing.
That's probably what I would visualize, too. And I've been in the factory when it was here in Pennsauken, but
yeah.
Some of the machines look like Ford built them.
And
they're still using them.
Okay.
Parts are very hard.
Yeah.
But they're still using them.
Okay.
Yeah.
And also, the name of the company, by the way,
is Baird's Chocolate House.
How do you spell Baird's?
Baird's Chocolate House.
Chocolates. Now, you mentioned Frillinger's also, you know, with Taffy, it's in the other room over here, and that they had bought this, about
James Saltwater Taffy bought the company of Baird's and their recipes mm-hmm. from Mr. Kelly, who owned Baird's, and he was the main proprietor. When he passed away, his wife couldn't handle it. So they bought lock, stock, and barrel.
Gotcha. Yeah, because when I think of Atlantic City, you know, Taffy's the next thing, saltwater taffy,
exactly.
I always think. And this is the brand that they sell on the boardwalk.
Right.
Interesting.
Right.
Okay. Now, where do they make that? I know they make it actually there on the mm-hmm. boardwalk. I've seen that. So that's something that, but do they bring in the sugar? I mean, they make it all just really?
They okay. bring everything in themselves.
Everything
yeah.
they need. Okay.
And that's why they had to move the factory. It was one of the specific reasons for being down in Pennsauken.
Yeah.
The corner that they were located on, the front store was very small.
Yeah.
But for the
yeah.
factory part of it, you could not get a trailer in there with your flour, your sugar, your wheat, all of that in
yes.
there
because okay.
you were at a intersection, so you
okay.
caused either a traffic jam or an accident.
Right.
So you have to move one or the other.
Right, gotcha. Yeah. Well, I see you got a lot of things that are open over here, so this is one of those kind of things you can try a sample if there's something else.
I have a sample
okay.
here, and if you
okay.
want to try something that
wow.
you don't, you just say, I like that flavor. Can I try that?
Something?
Sure.
Okay, I will do that. Owner, I'm going to try a sample. I'm going to turn this off, and I'm
sure.
going to give it a sample over here. Sorry that you guys out there in podcast land can't hear this. Let me ask you, by the way, the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word.
Mm-hmm.
What is a magic word that you would live by? What would be your magic word?
A lot of people at Easter.
Family.
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 I love it. And this is a family organization there.
Well, we're not family as far as all the employees
yeah.
here, but we make it, when you walk into this, we want you to feel welcomed into our home because this is a chocolate home, a house.
I love it. Yeah. Well, time to eat. This is Scotty out.
Scotty out.
Okay, perfect. All right, we're here just before the awards ceremony at 7:30. It's a little after 5 o'clock here at the MAS, day 3. And I wanted to talk with just some of the youth who had competed in the contest. I'm here, first of all, with Alex Boyce. Hey, Alex.
How's it going?
Great, thank you. I wanted to just chat with you about your competition act. Now, you competed in stage or close-up?
Stage.
You were in stage, and how did you think you did?
Oh, I think it went well. You know, I had a couple minor issues, but, you know, just trying to have fun and
You just kind of work through it. Yeah, you know,
right. Definitely.
You don't let something bother you. That's the important thing, I guess. You know that right. you learn in competition. It's like the whole act wasn't ruined and hangs necessarily on
right,
dropping
right.
one thing or whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Now you've been doing this for how long then?
I've been doing magic for about 6 years, and I've been working on a dev act for about 2.
And you're how old?
I'm 15.
15. And why did you decide to do doves as opposed? I mean, it seems to me that most youth are into like street magic, or they think, you know, Danny Garcia is the coolest or whatever, you know, and Wayne Houch and all the guys, and so that's right, what they right. kind of want to do. What made you decide you want to take that dovetail into doves?
Well, I always got, you know, I think it was because some of the first exposure that I saw was dove magic, and, you know, guys like Lance and Joseph, and, you know, really inspired me. They were, you know, classy guys, like those guys in the
yeah.
movies with the tux going in and strolling into the casino.
Right.
And, you know, that I always thought was really cool, and, you know, dove magic, I always thought, has a great history, and blows an audience mind, because as a layperson, I think, you know, I think that's got to be the coolest thing. You know, you got a silk, and then you got a bird.
Yeah. Well, you were saying something earlier to me about coins. You know, that's why you didn't want to get like a jumbo coin, because...
Because, you know, I think an audience, you know, you can bang it as many times on the table as you want, but I think, you know, somebody's always going to say, hey, you know, it's probably collapsible. With a bird or a living animal or whatever, you know, it's kind of hard to collapse.
Yeah.
But,
yeah, exactly. Now, have you attended Tannen's... camp?
I have attended Tannen's Magic Camp. It's been my, I've done 4 years, and best week of the year, and have
and
a great
you get a lot
time.
Out of it then?
Oh, I get a ton out of it. You get lectures and workshops and classes, and, you know, there's evening shows, and just hanging out with the pros in the lobby.
And they have different people each year who are counselors?
Oh, yeah, different people each year as counselors, and then they have special guests and performers and...
Someone impressed you this year?
Oh, yeah, Johnny Thompson was probably the highlight for me. He, really, literally changed my life. And,
why is that? I mean, obviously, you're a dove guy, and so is he. So
right. Just some of the dove stuff that he was giving me a couple tips on was
priceless, huh?
Priceless, right.
And just the fact that he's kind of sitting and chatting with you and giving you
right,
some advice.
Right, yeah, like,
hey,
it's like my hero sitting there giving me some advice.
Yeah.
I'm sitting there, and oh, it's amazing.
Yeah. And so you hope some year to go back and be a counselor?
Oh, yeah, that would be, that's a... really cool thing to be is, you know, you go as a camper and then you turn counselor, and I'd love to go for the rest of my life.
That would be cool. Well, there's certainly a lot of people, you know, to get some counseling from, you know, here. At
right.
NES. You've
oh,
been
yeah.
attending for years, I assume, here?
Oh, yeah. This is my second year here, and there's, you know, it's cool because it's not a huge convention like the national conventions, but what that implies is they usually bring in a couple big names, and, you know, you get to hang out with them and talk and learn, mm-hmm. and which you don't usually get at a big convention.
At a big convention, you don't have the time. It's kind of like, hey, how you doing? What's going on? And
exactly.
Go to the next person, yeah.
Right, and
yeah.
I've been sitting here with Eric DeCamps for like 4 hours. And
how awesome is that, you know?
It's amazing.
And he's not one of the performers. He's just here
right.
hanging out. And
exactly, and he's
yeah.
just, you know, these guys come and they're hanging out, and they're just chilling with us.
So that's the advantage. You would encourage other people then to your age to come to a convention.
Oh yeah, you got to get off the computer and come to the convention and meet people, and that's where you really learn the
yeah,
real stuff.
There are things you can do, I think, you know, online, in which you kind of have a you know, a conference of other people
oh, yeah.
like mine, obviously. But there's nothing like actually sitting and
right.
meeting
no,
the people,
this
shaking
is,
hands,
I've, that's,
becoming friends with.
Right, and that's what you do. You meet the friends at conventions, and I meet all these people, and I keep in touch with them online. And, you know, Facebook and stuff like this, you know, yeah. I listen to all the time, and it's great.
Well, cool. You have to tune in over here. And while we get then another one, I've got Ian, then you were, thanks very much. I appreciate
thank
it,
you
Alex.
So much.
Ian, that you were in the competition then also. We had Alex, who was in the stage competition, and you were in the close-up, right?
Yep, junior close-up.
And did you compete last year? Oh, by the way, it's Ian Flynn, and right? From
Yeah, Ian home? Flynn from Marlton, New Jersey, only 15 minutes away.
Oh, so you can walk here almost. and you're how old?
I'm 17.
17, so you could drive yourself. I mean,
yep,
you know,
I did.
I think he was 15, so he had to get a ride. Now, you were competing in how? Is this your first time you competed at the MAES? Or?
Yeah, this is the first year I competed at MAES. It was. I'll say it was a lot more fun this year than it was last year, because last year I kind of just threw something together. This year, once you put the things that you want to do together, it makes it so much better.
Did you feel as if it just kind of fell into place? I mean, you had these ideas, and it's like, hey, this will flow into this, and this is something I do very well, and I think it'll... Or how did you come up with your routine?
Well, I came up I had the tricks in mind, but I talked to a few of my counselors from Tannen's Magic Camp, and they were like, you should maybe do this. And I was like, that works. And I just kind of put my own spin on things, and they told me what my ideas, how they would work out, and it just kind of came together really well.
Wow, that's awesome. And so how do you feel your chances are here this year?
I don't know.
You did pretty good?
I think I did pretty good. Okay.
Good.
I mean, I don't want to
jinx it.
Jinx it, correct. Knock on wood.
Yeah, exactly. But you got pretty good reaction from the folks.
Everybody seemed to enjoy it, which is the goal, not always to win, but to make sure everyone has a good time.
Exactly. Well, good. Well, we'll see how it goes later on whenever they do that. I appreciate it, and thanks for your time. Kind of move over and check out with somebody else.
Awesome.
Okay, next I have Bill Boaz. Hey, Bill. How's
Hello.
It going?
Hello. Pretty good. How are you?
Fine, thank you. And you're from where?
Hudson, Ohio.
Hudson, Ohio. So this is not like, I mean, he was just 15 minutes away. You know?
Yeah, this is about 8 hours away.
So this is this really considered then, I guess, Mid-Eastern for you, or Magicians?
Eastern
for you?
East Coast. Yeah, pretty
this is
much.
So Ohio's East Coast, basically.
Well, not Ohio. It's Midwest, but
okay,
you know.
Okay, then.
Mace is East Coast.
Have you attended Mace before? Or
no, this is my first year.
Why did you decide to come here as opposed to Magi Fest or something like that?
Well, I go to Magic Fest every year.
I would think so.
Now, I talked to Robert Soad, and he recommended definitely go to Mace because he loved the place, and I'd like it too. So I ended up coming here because I'd never been to the East Coast for a magic convention before.
Yeah.
So.
And you're how old? Sorry?
17 years old.
17. Mm-hmm. And so did you come out with somebody else or your folk or a whole group of people?
I came out with my dad.
Uh-huh.
And it's just him and I here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like a father-son thing.
Oh, kind of a weekend. Weekend kind of a thing. They weren't originally planning on having us over Labor Day weekend, but it kind of worked out, I'm sure, so your pop can take off, you know, sometime then, too.
Oh, yeah,
so,
definitely.
Be driving back, I guess, then tomorrow. You competed in both the close-up and stage, when I was watching that, first of all, I'm a huge fan of Frank Sinatra, so, you know, when you start playing music, it's like I'm hooked, and the kind of thing, when you started doing, you know, the card stuff, I was, it was reminiscent, you know, of Sean Farquhar's schism-winning act,
right,
with Sting,
right,
you know.
Right.
Let's tell me how that all evolved, and you can talk a little bit about that, then, since this is an audio podcast, and they can't see this, but
definitely.
It's awesome.
Definitely. Thank you so much. I love Sean Farquhar's Shape of My Heart routine. I saw him do that. I'm trying to remember. I think it was at the 2008 convention at Magi Fest. I'm trying to remember.
Yeah,
it was 2008, 2009, one of those two. He did that there. It was the first time I saw him perform, and I'm like, oh, it's amazing. I love it. So I watched that routine 1,000 times. And, you know, I started working on the cuts, and eventually, you know, maybe after half a year, I got the routine down. And I love Shape of My Heart because I do that all the time.
Yeah.
And later, in 2010, I decided that Shape of My Heart was really good. It's Sean Farquhar's routine, though. It should stay his.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided to create my own, which is Luck Be a Lady, which is a similar routine. It's to music. The words mean something. When I use somebody's queen, do an entire routine with queens, and under the signed queen is produced the other three queens.
Mm-hmm.
So I really liked the way it all worked out. It was in the same sort of theme of Shape of My Heart, but obviously it's a completely different feel, emotion, which I liked because it was more of my classy sort of Sinatra kind
of nice look
feel.
On stage.
But I love Sean Farquhar's Shape of My Heart, and I remember doing that for, I think, a newspaper interview I did in Cleveland, the Plain Dealer, and they took a video of me doing that. I talked to Sean later that year at Sorcerer Safari, the Canada's premier magic camp. I go there most of the time. I went there 2 years in a row on scholarships that I won from the SAM and from the organization itself. But when I went there, I talked to him, and he's like, I was kind of nervous. Like, is it okay if I did this for the newspaper and took a video of it? And he was actually really supportive, and he liked it.
He's
and
he
really is. He's a really cool guy. I love Sean.
Now, your stage act also, again, has a Frank Sinatra song, and that's a very classy act. Talk a little bit about that.
My stage act is a combination of three phases that I connect to get together to create sort of a story kind of feel for stage that I also split up in my normal show to do in three different acts.
Okay.
Like my rope routine I did in the very beginning to World on a String by Frank Sinatra. Actually, it wasn't Frank singing, it was Bobby Caldwell singing. It's a more of an expressive feel.
Yeah.
I got the little punches that I wanted in it to time it.
You have a nice ear for music.
But I do love music. Music is a big part of my act, so I love music. And the rope routine, because I hadn't seen a lot of people do rope routine to music, not like completely to music, though.
Right.
I mean, I've seen people do similar things. But so I decided to come up with that, which was really fun, because I normally do a stand-up rope routine in my normal show. The second phase was a candle routine, which I developed having, you know, of course, Lance Burton's routine in the back of my mind, because who doesn't? I mean,
right.
Lance's routine is incredible.
Yeah.
And I took some moves from that, and I developed to my own, put them together to create sort of a smooth story, like, you know, person that is doing these things but doesn't really understand, like, huh, it's kind of crazy, I don't know how that happened. And,
yeah.
And it developed, and then once the Canva routine ends, of course, it segues into a mirror routine where I produce a silk, and the silk goes through the mirror, which is double-sided, and it's into the song Imagine.
John Lennon,
but David Archuleta singing.
That's who it was, right.
So that's a stage act. It's very music oriented because I love
the emotion. That
it the audience feels the magic. They don't just
sure.
see it.
Yeah.
So it's
well, another thing is when people hear music, they later if the magic is strong enough, they will associate that with you.
Oh yeah, you yeah. And it helps. You know, it showcases you as a magician rather
yes.
than the tricks themselves. So
right.
Which is
very now, which came first, the stage or the close-up, as far as what you're working on stage, I mean, music-wise mm-hmm. and competition-wise?
Well, close-up, I developed that routine first in 2010. Last year, I developed, I think it was, might be a year and a half ago, I developed my stage routine. And I developed the close-up routine to win at Mad Eye Fest
mm-hmm.
because that was, you know, I grew up around Columbus. It's great, a great area for magicians. It's really a lot of fun. So I competed there with a close-up routine, Luck Be a Lady, and that ended up working out very well. And I kind of developed that routine even more over the last couple of years. So it's about 2 years old. And then when I decided to do the stage, I'd already been doing a candle routine, just not nearly as advanced as I do it now.
Mm-hmm.
Rope routine and a mirror routine. They just weren't connected and they weren't set to the same music. I was thinking, you know, I really want to do something different. I want to step something up. So I decided to do something similar to Luck Be a Lady with the Frank Sinatra feel and the classy look kind of thing, but also have it segue into a more beautiful feel near the end.
Yeah.
And I think it's it took me a long time to figure out a song that bridged between Frank Sinatra with World on a String and Imagine by John Lennon, because they're two completely, I mean, it's, so I came up with Change the World by Eric Clapton, and it's working out for me right now, I think.
Wow, that's great.
So,
have you competed in one in other contests elsewhere?
Magi Fest, here, I mean, I haven't had a lot of time to go travel to different places, mm-hmm. but I've done very well in those competitions, and I plan on going to the SAM, mm-hmm. the IBM, and the World Magic Seminar. Those are the three big conventions I want to hit in the
next year.
Great. And
what's your long-term plan as far as college and what you're going to study and all that?
In college, I'm going to go probably to either Cincinnati, OU, mm-hmm. Ohio University, or Bowling Green's another option, or Kenyon College. It's one of those four. I'm going to study most likely a major in psychology and a minor in business.
Mm-hmm.
Very magic-related options to study. So,
because
exactly. I do want to carry on magic as my full-time career. It's been my business since 10 years old,
yeah.
And just recently in the last 3 or 4 years, it's really taken off, and I've had a lot of fun. So,
and you really enjoy coming to magic conventions, I guess.
Oh, I do. It's fantastic, and the connections that you feel at Maze is just incredible because it's so intimate and relaxed,
yeah.
and the setting and the atmosphere is great. It's fun. It's
You can sit and talk with them. I mean, you've been talking to Eric DeCamps here for the last hour or so.
Oh, yeah. It's great. It really is.
It is pretty cool.
It is.
Well, great. Well, good luck to you then, Bill. I appreciate the time that you've given us here for the Magic Word. Let me ask you also that with this, it's called the Magic Word Podcast, mm-hmm. and so what would be your magic word? What do you live
by? My magic word.
I mean, it could be for life or for your performance or whatever.
Does it have to be a word? Can it be a phrase?
It could be a phrase.
A phrase. Music in motion.
Music in motion.
Music in motion.
I like that. Very good. Thank you again very much.
Thank
good
you.
Good luck. That's enough for now. Scotty out. All right, we're here after the MAS final evening gala show in the dealer's room. Last chance for everybody to buy their stuff here, basically. But I'm very proud to be sitting here and talking with Adele Freer. Hello, Adele.
Hello, Scott.
This is really great. I wanted to talk with you about several things. One is that your book, which has just come out. So it was an excellent book. I just finished reading this. I had purchased. And so how long did it take you to kind of put this together?
Well, I started, I guess, in early 2005 just by writing stories
yeah.
that Dan Waldron said write that down. You just told me a story. Write it down.
Yes.
I kept doing that. And about a year or two later, he said, I think we can write a book.
That's great.
So that's how it got started.
Well, let's back up. I apologize for the listeners out here that might say, anyway, Adele Freer. Friel. Sorry.
Yeah.
It was the book is entitled
Memoirs of an Elusive Moth Disappearing Nightly with Harry Blackstone and his show of 1001 Wonders. How do you like that?
That is just one mouthful.
Yeah, it is.
And you are one of the last living assistants, I guess, who was actually on stage. I mean, I know that Nick Ruggiero's around everybody, but as far as a box jumper, you're the last box jumper.
There actually, from the time that I was on the show that I know, there are four of us alive. Nick Ruggiero, Dick Berry, Dennis Mahoney, and me.
Okay.
We're the only ones alive that I know of on the time when I was on
the
show.
Now, you hadn't really kept contact with a lot of people, and as I was reading the book, I thought it was interesting. So you decided after that the show of 1001 Wonders had closed and you went off and did your dancing and everything, that you kind of didn't think about magic again until, I guess, that your son had the party. Let's talk a little bit about that.
I thought about it, but I never really thought it was
reconnect with
important.
Your friends. Yeah.
Pardon me?
And you didn't reconnect with your friends that you knew from during that time.
No, I never got back in touch with magic again until I had a surprise birthday party on my 75th birthday in 2004, and they gave me a book by Dan Waldron, and my family gave me a 9-minute video of bits and pieces of Blackstone show, and I'm on it at least 9 times.
Wow.
I had no idea it was even it even existed.
Yes.
And I never saw
surprise.
The show from the audience because the night that I performed, the day I joined, I performed that night, and I never saw the show from the audience. But on this little film clip of just little shots, really fast movements and everything, I saw for the first time what it looked like what I looked like coming out as Red Riding Hood from the costume trunk. I never knew what it looked like. It was amazing.
It would be kind of strange because, I mean, it's a job to you.
It
wasn't entertainment. I mean, it was a job. I mean,
it was a gig because we were poor and I was helping to support my family.
Yes. And you're from Philadelphia, is that right? I recall in the book that you, and then you got on the train. Took off with Blackstone. So.
I did.
Interesting story. And what were your parents saying during that time? I mean, you were 17 at the time, I think?
I was 17 when I joined the show. And I kept writing letters home and sending them money orders every week. And I was helping them. And they supported what I wanted to do.
Right.
And I was dancing on the show because Blackstone created the Elusive Moth.
Yes.
And that's I danced.
Now, how does he come up with those ideas? As I was reading that, it seemed like I know he had the asthmatic problems, kind of ended the tours kind of short from time to time, but he would always go back and seem to recover or recuperate, of course, in Colon, Michigan, there at Blackstone Island.
Right.
But did he and his brother Pete just kind of come up with these ideas? Did they ever discuss any of these with you, or they just said, okay, here's what we're going to do?
Well, he had an idea, and he wrote me 2 letters, and one of them, the first one was he had an idea what he would like to do, and he told me that he's going to have a costume made specially for me, and also I was to think of some kind of music, and also to choreograph my own dance, which I did. But mostly it was drums, and it was a jungle scene.
Right, the tribal jungle people were chasing you, I guess.
Yes, and they captured me and put me in a spider web.
Explain the premise from the beginning about the drums and whatnot. I mean, just kind of walk us through as if we were there that night watching the show.
Well, if you figure you're in a jungle and there's the jungle people are drumming up music and.
Right. Drumming
and
the drums.
They see this moth flying around.
So you're not actually a woman, you were a moth.
I was a moth.
Okay, yes. I thought you turned into a moth. Okay, so you're a moth flying around
while
they're
moth
drumming.
To begin with on that illusion.
Then. Okay, then.
Yeah, I didn't turn into a moth.
Okay.
But I disappeared at the end.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this moth is just kind of flying around, and so the drummers are drumming, and so they start chasing you as a moth?
Yes, they did.
Then?
They chased me, and they were capturing me, and they wrapped me up in this spider's web and hoisted me up about 12 feet off the stage, and Blackstone came in and made some magical gestures, and poof, there was a puff of smoke and I was gone.
Wow.
And I disappeared a lot with Blackstone.
Now, did they, I guess sometimes did matinees, did some shows in the afternoon, and then maybe a couple shows at night, or how many?
We usually did 10 shows a week.
A week, okay.
Yes.
In the same city? Or?
Oh, no, no. Oh, it could be the same city, but no matter whether we were in the same city or doing one-nighters, we did 10 shows a week.
Now, when you were doing one-nighters, did you do pretty much the same show? I mean, that's a lot of stuff to unpack for one night as opposed to staying for a week.
It just depended on the stage where we were, whether
okay.
we could hang the Chinese fantasy, the lantern, whether we could hang the buzzsaw, and also the levitation, the Karnak.
The Karnak.
Karnak.
Right. And then Pete was cutting trap doors.
They're big, and we might not have enough time to put them up, or if the stage isn't the right kind for us to do that. But we did every other thing.
Right. Wow.
Animals and everything.
How many animals were actually toured with you?
Oh, man. Well, we had either a burro or a miniature horse.
Trixie. Yeah.
We also
then ate the polish or something and died.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
We also we had a gander, and he thought he owned a show. It was his. We had a lot of ducks and canaries and doves, and that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then there were 32 mostly gorgeous women, or what was it?
There were 30 in the cast, yes.
I always thought that's funny. He said mostly gorgeous women. It's like, some word?
You can take that just about any way you want.
Now, you have got a lot of fantastic stories. Is there anything that was left out or something that you wish you would have put back in the book, or another story you would share?
There are several things that did not get in the book.
One you can share with
but
us?
But I'm using them sort of when I do my lectures or when I'm interviewed.
Well, here we go.
One of them did not get in the book, and it's something I wanted in there, and it was an oversight somehow. If it goes to reprint, I want to have the list of all the names of the people that were on the show with me from the time I started.
Mm-hmm.
And there are about 32 of them, 32 to 35 people.
Yes.
And I listed what they did on the show.
I saw in the back of the book currently it showed all the tour dates.
Yes, but the list of the people is missing, and
right.
I want that back.
That'll
in.
Be on the next edition.
Yeah.
Now, how many were printed? Were there 1,000, 2,000? How many copies of...
There were 1,200.
1,200, okay.
I'm just starting.
Oh, yeah, and you've been touring, I mean, already. I mean, you talk about you used to tour with Blackstone. Now you've been doing the convention tours, with magicians,
yes,
haven't you?
Yes. Last year I did 13 conventions, and I wanted to cut back. Now I'm on my 14th, and I have two more this year.
That's cutting back?
Yeah, it's cutting
okay.
back.
Okay. And so you're more than 75 then now. That's a lot of travel.
Well, I know. You say I'm more than 75. I'll be 82 in November.
82. Bless you. And you're looking spry, I tell you. You know, I think about John Calvert having just celebrated his 100th birthday and still going strong. And so.
Yeah, I was up to New York. I saw his 100th birthday.
I spoke earlier with William Rauscher, and he was talking about his interview with him. It was fantastic. Well, let's talk a little bit about the MAAS. Have you, since you're from Philly, you've come to these conventions, I assume, several in the past?
Yes, I've come to two or three of them because I only found out about them a couple of years ago.
Oh, really? Well.
So, and I've come to them, and last year I got the surprise of my lifetime.
What was that?
They gave me a lifetime membership in the MAES.
Fabulous.
I was just dumbfounded. I couldn't... If you can believe it, I was speechless.
Yeah, you haven't stopped here yet. I only have to ask you a question, and they made you speechless.
Right.
Well, as far as this year, have you experienced much of the show and everything? Have you got some highlights or things you can share? We just saw the evening show. We had lectures earlier today and everything. Any comments on what you think?
Well, I think the talent from the young people now is just absolutely fantastic.
Yes.
They're going for their own creativity and their own styles. And yes, they might be crushed a little bit because they don't win the top prize, but this is their training time. And they can throw enough mud on that wall, and some of it's going to stick.
They got to keep throwing it.
These kids have so much talent.
Oh, goodness, yes.
So, and I'm really proud of the young people that are...
I was surprised, that I have been to some larger conventions where there have been fewer fewer competitors. And they, not only did they have many competitors, but they were quality. They were very good.
Absolutely.
And youth and seniors as well. I mean, it was a lot of... I mean, the competition went on and on and on. I mean, sometimes they're big conventions. I mean, like at TAON, we may only have four or five contestants. Yes. And we have 800 to 1,000 people.
I know.
You know, here they had 160, and I don't know how many. They must have had a dozen competitors.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm encouraged by the youth also who have been attending.
Yes.
You know.
I think it's wonderful. They're our future.
Yep, I agree. But Arthur Trace and Yumi and David Casero, everybody just did a great job, I thought, of this evening's show, then, too.
And they're all 18 years of age. That's hard to believe.
That's right. That's right. All young. Well, listen, this has been great. I appreciate the time very much you've given us, and that, and also the book that you have given us, it'll be a legacy, you know, that will last forever. That is
thank you.
Wonderful. I'd recommend people to go out and get the Memoirs of the Elusive Moth. Tell me the mouthful again. What is it?
Memoirs of an Elusive Moth. Disappearing Nightly with Harry Blackstone and his show of 1,001 Wonders.
And this would be available where?
This is available from my publisher, Squash Publishing. It's with Magic Dealers. And also, if they want to write me an email, I can send them a book.
And your email address is?
My email address is arindress@aol.com. That's arindress@aol.com. And when they write to me, I need something in the subject line that says that it... magic history or something that has to do with that, or MAES,
right,
or your name, Scott.
Yes.
And I need name, address, a phone number if possible, an email address from that person, and tell me where they live so I can tell them. Well, the book is $35, and I can tell them what the price is for mailing and shipping it.
Awesome.
It's usually $4.95. However, I have a request from a fella in Belgium and one from Argentina.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm making arrangements to get books to them.
Overseas as well?
Yeah.
Well, great. Thank you very much. Let me ask you one last thing. The name of my podcast is called The Magic Word. What is a magic word that you live by? What's your magic word? It could be for your life, you know, for your career.
It might be off the top of my head.
Yeah.
Go for it.
Go for it.
Yeah.
And you certainly have all of your life.
Yeah.
You have gone for it. I mean, just live free.
Yeah.
You know, I think that it's a, your book is a testament.
Take a chance, keep dreaming, and keep working at it.
Wow.
That's all.
Those are good words, a lot of good words over there, good magic words. Adele, thank you so much for being my guest on The Magic Word over here.
Thank you, Scott.
So, I appreciate it. We will close it out over here. This will be Scotty out. Well, I'm here in the after party then right now, and Joey the CEO. Hey, Joey, what are you blowing up over here?
Have a hit before you record that. Go ahead.
Oh, this is going to be good. Okay.
Yeah, this will be good. Here you go.
This will be good. Okay.
Okay, this is Scott Wells, and we're here with The Magic Word, and we're going to be talking about, I've got Jan Goodsell here that is
going to
be
for the... That is good. Oh, thanks. I feel so much better. I feel lightheaded, though. Whew. It wasn't a martini, either. Thank you, Joey. Oh, it's not the alcohol, is it? Jan Goodsell, one of the past presidents over here, the SAM. Hello, Jan. Glad to have you.
Hello, Scott.
And we're here on The Magic Word. I wanted just to say, talk with you because this was your first MAES convention. I wanted to kind of get your perspective as, you know, you travel around a lot. You've seen a lot of conventions. You've met a lot of magicians. And like with me, you know, that I have found by coming to this for my first time, there are a lot of people who I don't know because they only come to this regional convention. But do you find this to be, like me, a very friendly convention, a lot of fun?
Oh, yes, yes. We have one out west that I've always felt was like that, and I thought, oh, okay, I'll see what the one in Philadelphia is like.
Right.
And it is. It's so friendly. Everybody just sucks you right in.
Yeah.
I met a lot of new people.
Yes.
Saw a lot of old people that I know, but it's really fantastic.
Now, why did you decide to come here? I mean, that
Mike Miller,
it is a small thing.
I know, and Mike Miller's a really good friend.
Sure.
And he's been telling me how great Mace is for a long time.
Yeah.
And frankly, I wanted to see Philadelphia, so I came in early.
Oh, so you did?
Yes, I came here.
Now, did you go? I tell you, I came here years ago, and there was a. I read something in Penn and Teller's, one of their books, Cruel Tricks for Good Friends or something, that was a museum that had these skulls and things. It was a. Did you go there by chance?
No, but.
Oh, it's awesome.
I know. I heard about it after.
Oh, okay. Darn it. You missed it.
I know.
You got to
so
come
I
back
got,
now.
I'm coming back. Exactly.
It is very cool.
Yes.
It's a surgical museum, so it's really not a museum.
It's the physicians.
I saw the
building.
Yes.
But I thought, why do I want to go to a physicians museum? Afterwards, I hear
all this, and
I'm going, okay, I'm putting that on my list for next time.
So what else did you see while you're in Philly?
Oh, I walked from the middle of town to the river.
Yes.
Twice. And I saw where Ben Franklin was born. I saw Betsy Ross's house. I saw the Constitution Museum.
Is this your first trip to Philly, then?
First trip I've done anything besides stay in a hotel and go to a meeting. Yeah.
Well, that's true. A lot of times you're in and out. It could be any place.
Exactly. Went to Independence Hall. Loved it. Walked to the art museum on the other side of town. Saw the Rodin Museum. Christ, I mean, that... I did a lot, except for the position.
So, all right, next time. Yeah.
Exactly.
You have to make a trip back.
Exactly.
Because you got a lot of friends out here, like with Mike, for an example.
Yes.
So Mike told you to come out, so you tried this. And so tell me about your perspective of this convention. What did you enjoy? You know, how is it different? What would you do to recommend to other people that need to come and see you? What did you like?
That's a good question.
That's my job.
Oh, yes, that's right, to ask questions. A lot of the people I know, well, I say a lot, fair amount, but the others were, you know, oh, we're glad to have you, but I got to tell you, too, the talent here this weekend was utterly unbelievable. I mean, you know, it's hard to get this good a lineup at our national.
Yeah, and this is only 160 people here.
I was just amazed.
What did you think of this evening's show?
Oh, well, except for the MC. Oh, yeah, well, he was okay. No. It was a great show. But, you know, all three nights we had a fantastic show. And the contest, I actually, my husband died when he heard this, I actually enjoyed the close-up.
The close-up?
Yes.
Wow.
I'm not a close-up person.
But you liked that.
This one was fantastic. The one that was, what, yesterday or the day before?
I think it was, what day is it? Saturday or Friday?
Right. Not the contest.
Oh, you're talking about for the professional close-up show. Yes. That was yesterday, yes.
It was.
Phenomenal.
It was.
Yeah.
Yes. So.
Yep, had Arthur Trace doing some close-up and David Cursero and...
They were just all, I mean, I know Arthur from this past summer, but...
And Ruben also, Ruben Moreland.
Well, and see, I've known Ruben
through the SYM.
For a long time, but he has really grown
into his skill.
But they were all, and I just, so when I went home and called my husband and said, I saw the best close-up show, he's going...
So,
it was great.
So that was a highlight then.
Yes.
So, hey, Eric, that you want to say a word?
Word.
There you go. Eric DeCamp's just kind of hanging out over here. Just practicing your pharaohs, are you?
Perfect pharaohs, I might add.
Oh, perfect pharaohs.
Are they in or out pharaohs?
A little bit of both, if you know what I mean.
In and out?
Yeah.
Kind of like the hamburgers. In and out.
Yeah. In and out.
That's what you're talking about.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Hamburgers. Always talking about food.
We have In and Outs at home.
We don't in Texas. Actually, they just opened two of them in Dallas, which I'm excited to
go. We have three in Utah, but I don't eat meat, so I have no idea.
Really? Are you a vegan?
No, I'm not a vegan.
What do you, wait a minute. You're not a vegan and you don't eat meat, so what do you eat?
Well, I don't eat red meat and I don't eat pork.
So that kind narrows down your choices.
I eat fish and
okay,
turkey.
Then. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's how you keep your girlish figure.
I don't know, but I like those veggie burgers.
Yep.
Yeah. Anyway, I don't know about the In-N-Out.
Yeah. Well, actually, the In-N-Out has like a veggie burger that instead of bread, they use lettuce. Like for the top
yeah,
and the bottom.
I did hear about that.
Yeah, my mother
well, they're supposed
loves
to
those.
Be, it's supposed to be a really good chain, but...
See, part of what I talk about on my podcast is food because I love food.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, I do too.
Yeah? Just, what's your favorite?
Sushi.
You like sushi?
I love sushi.
No.
Yeah, real sushi.
Tonight, it was really good.
Did
really?
You? Where'd you go?
Right
where'd
down the
go?
Block. It was a Mikado.
A Mikado. I saw that.
Yeah, it was
really?
Very good.
Right across from the chocolate place.
Yes, yes exactly.
That's where awesome. We should have gone. Oh,
yeah,
well.
We had a great time. They have no liquor license, though. They can't sell alcohol.
Can you bring in your own, though?
Yeah, they can bring your own bottle, but it was fine. It was fine. I mean, I don't yeah. drink that often, so it doesn't matter. But it was
I'd be happy.
Now they had just a fresh sushi chef, I guess, right
yes.
there.
Yes, and everything was fresh. It was good. It was a nice evening. It was a great evening.
Who all went with you? Did you have a big group?
We had Joey the C. We had John B. Myself and the lovely Celeste at camp.
Yeah.
So she was there, and we had a good time.
You know, I was actually at the chocolate factory. I was at Bayer's until 4 o'clock. You know, I almost thought about going across the street. And
how was the chocolate there?
The what?
How was the chocolate there?
It was good. And you know that they were, in fact, it's, you'll hear this on the podcast, I talked with one of the ladies over there, Eleanor, you know, who was one of the sales ladies who worked there. And that's been there since the 50s, and apparently the Freilinger's taffy, saltwater taffy. It's on, you know, the taffy, saltwater taffy on Atlantic City on the boardwalk, you know, bought out Bayer some years ago, and so it's all part of the same family.
Oh,
then,
okay, that's cool.
Apparently, so. Anyway, no, as far as to answer your question, the chocolate was awesome. They had,
it's good.
They had dark chocolate and milk chocolate and all these different kinds of things that were all covered and everything. That and it's a house. It's not the factory. It's actually just a place where you go and sample, you know. They had, and she walked around with me and, you know, had a little glove, and she said, what do you want to try? And they just, oh, man, I probably ate a pound of chocolate. Just, I'd like to try this, and then I want to try these pretzels.
He was getting it free.
Well, I did. I ended up buying a pound of chocolate I brought back with me. Yeah,
so. You ate a free pound, and you bought it.
And I bought a pound. Well, see.
So you got a 50% off.
Basically, that's the way you see, I'm thinking.
Always business with you. Always business with you.
You see, dark chocolate goes with scotch, and my wife and I love scotch, and so I thought, well, I'll bring some back.
You dip it?
Well.
You dunk it?
Like a Dunkin' Donuts?
Yeah. You dunk it like Joe DiMaggio in Seinfeld. It's always... Oh, Joe's a dunker.
Oh, that's right, Joe's...
Joe's a dunker.
Yeah.
Just like... Whoop! Whoop! Remember that?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. You know, my wife's Kathy's a dental hygienist, and she plays Seinfeld episodes for all her patients all day long. That or Forrest Gump.
Oh, Forrest Gump.
Yeah, she plays the movie all day long. Also. Now, being from Georgia, I guess you probably...
Yeah, I can understand him.
Yeah, you can hear...
Seinfeld, I couldn't understand.
Yep. But no, this has been a good convention. I thought that I'm glad to see, you know, what was his name, Bill Boies, who had won the I had interviewed him earlier, one of the youth. He won Close Up and Stage, and his thing with the Frank Sinatra and his use of music. Oh, he's got it all going on. I think that's a name we're going to hear about.
That's great.
Oh, it was really fantastic.
Yep. I'm encouraged by the youth that I see here.
Yes.
You know, I see a lot of people who've got gray hair like me. And Eric.
What are you talking about?
What are you talking about, Willis?
What are you talking about, Willis?
I don't have gray hair.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, yeah. Only my hairdresser knows for sure.
That's right. Well, mine definitely does. So, but anyway, yeah. Well, since I work with the youth,
yes.
That's what I'm really in it.
Well, tell me about the SYM. I know you have a passion. I mean,
yes.
You're in charge of this. And so how and why did you get in charge, or why did you start following it?
Chargott asked me if I would. You know, when you work with the kids, you don't have to grow up. I'm the female version of Peter Pan.
I can see that.
And, you know, working with the kids.
I always wondered about the whether Peter Pan was a boy or a girl anyhow.
Yeah, well,
I wonder about the gender
issue
there.
That's right. And we won't go into that. But I truly see all of these kids, you know, they're the future. you know, and to watch people like Ruben grow the past 5 years.
Sure.
And Harrison, and some of them don't go on to become world famous or even locally famous.
That is so awesome to see.
But they
that.
Do so well in what they choose to do,
right.
And a lot of it's their experience with this.
Yep.
So, plus I get to play all day.
That's fun. Jan, thank you very much for your time.
You bet.
I appreciate it. And I think we got to move around over here then now.
That's
been great.
That's
right. Thank you, Jan. Good show.
Okay.
Scotty out.